Last time we were in Leviticus chapter 25 talking about the sabbatical cycle, the sabbatical year, how God gave the Israelites not just simply a day of rest each week, he gave them a year of rest every 7 years. And it was actually a rest for the land, for the animals as well, that didn't have to be used in agricultural pursuits. This was in place of rotating crops or of lots and lots of fertilization of the fields. It gave everything a chance to kind of just breathe and get back to its better place. So the sabbatical year happened after 6 years of work, and it would have been counted from the first agricultural cycle year once Israel arrived in the Promised Land. And I have made some calculations and made some charts based on that as to when the sabbatical years should have fallen. The next item is not as clearly known to have been adhered to as the sabbatical year, because we have the sabbatical year mentioned in other historical settings of history, like their interaction with Alexander the Great, and he granted them no taxes in the sabbatical year, and their interaction with Augustus Caesar, who started making laws that guaranteed that Jewish people would not have to pay any taxes in their sabbatical year. Now we have to talk about the year of Jubilee. And here is how it is described, starting in verse 8 of Leviticus 25. You shall count 7 weeks of years, so that'd be 7 cycles of 7 years. So 49 years total. You shall count 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the time of the 7 weeks of years shall give you 49 years. That's not just any 49-year period. Mark that. That's very important. I think that's exceptionally important in understanding Daniel chapter 9. It is 7 sabbatical cycles. Verse number 9. Then you shall sound the loud trumpet on the 10th day of the 7th month, otherwise known to us as the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. On the Day of Atonement, you shall sound the trumpet throughout your land, and you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you when each of you shall return to his property and each of you shall return to his clan. Now, jubilee comes to us from Hebrew because the word here in the text is yobel, yobel, which has the idea of remission. Not in the sense of sin in this case, but in the sense of indebtedness or perhaps contractual obligations. So what we're going to discover is that the 50th year was a financial reset, particularly for land contracts. And we'll get into all the details in a little bit. Now, just to make it plain, when we do the calculations with this, the 50th year is always the first year of the next 7-year cycle. So it's not like 50 years and then the year of Jubilee, 49 years, and then the year of Jubilee, and then we start with another 49 years. It doesn't work that way. They overlap. 50th year is also the first year of the next cycle. Okay. Verse number 11. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of itself, nor gather the grapes from the undressed vines. We heard that language before. That's the language of the sabbatical year. So the jubilee year is going to be a sabbatical year as well, which means that we're going to end up with two sabbatical years in a row. Year number 49 of the cycle, nobody works in the fields, in the agriculture, to bring in a harvest. Nobody plants anything. Year number 1 of the next cycle of 50 is also the 50th year of the previous cycle, and it is also a year of not working. So 49-50, nobody works. It is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You may eat the produce of the field. So you can eat any type of volunteer crop that comes up as needed, but you may not do an official harvest because you're taking the year off. Now, we get to the reset activity. Verse 13, in this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his property. Now, when the Israelites go into the Promised Land, one of the first things that they have to do is divide all of that property up into tribal units, and then all of those tribal units are going to be subdivided into individual inheritance plots, for lack of a better term. It's going to be allotments that people will receive as their family property. Now, the land will always belong to God. So what we're actually seeing is that each family is going to be charged by God with overseeing their particular plot of land. Now, in their oversight, they can subdivide it up, which they will do over time because they'll give an inheritance to their kids. And they'll also, from time to time, allow other people to utilize that property for their own agricultural pursuits. And we'll get into more of the details on that in a moment. But in the 50th year, when that trumpet sounds on Yom Kippur, all of those contractual arrangements are reversed, and the property resorts to the family that it originally belonged to, and actually, we should say, to the family line that the property originally belonged to. Now, if you happen to have been alive, when the 50th year rolled around, that property would come back to you, even though you had let somebody else have it in the years previous. All right, so here's how it works. Verse 14, if you make a sale to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor, you shall not wrong one another. Now, this is talking about the transfer of property rights, which is the better way of thinking of this is the transfer of leasing rights, because the property actually belongs to God. The Holy Land belongs to the Lord. He's just letting these people live on their own particular piece of it. So if you make a sale of part of what you're responsible to your neighbor, or maybe you buy some of what your neighbor's responsible for your own use, you're not supposed to be cheating each other. You shall pay your neighbor according to the number of years after the Jubilee, and he shall sell to you according to the number of years for crops. Meaning you're going to look at the calendar and you're going to go, okay, we're 10 years away from the Jubilee. So you're only going to get 8 crops out of it, probably, because you got to have not just simply a sabbatical year in there. You might have two sabbatical years in there that need to be accounted for. So what you're really only valuing in the transfer of the property is what's the value of the crops that you can get out of it between now and Jubilee. That's the cost. That's the value of the lease. Verse 16, if the years are many, you shall increase the price because he's going to have more use or you're going to get more use. If the years are few, you shall reduce the price, for it is the number of the crops that he is selling to you. You shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am he who is your God. So God says, you better remember who's the king here and to whom the land actually belongs. When you interact with other people, be fair in valuing the use of that property in producing crops. Verse 18, therefore you shall do my statutes and keep my rules and perform them, and then you will dwell in the land securely. So if you behave yourself, everything will go well. The land will yield its fruit, you will eat your fill, and dwell in security, or dwell in it securely. So this is the conditionality of the covenant. Behave yourself, you get the blessings. Misbehave yourself, you get the curse. Now, if you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year? If we may not sow or gather our inner crop. So don't panic, God says, and say, we'll starve every seventh year then. Verse 21, I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year so that it will produce a crop sufficient for 3 years. When you sow in the eighth year, you will be eating some of the old crop, and you shall eat the old until the ninth year when its crop arrives. Now, what we have here are two little things we have to think about. In a normal year, the sabbatical year, you don't do anything. You plant in the fall that starts the first year of the next cycle. So that would be the eighth year in this example. And you won't get that crop brought in until close to the start of the next year after that. And so basically, God says, don't worry about it. I will make sure that your sixth year crop will be super abundant. If you're behaving yourself, I'll do that for you. And you will still have plenty of supplies until you're harvesting that first crop of the new cycle. Now, in a double sabbatical, that is, when you got a jubilee, God says, I'm going to provide enough in that sixth year of the last sabbatical cycle that you can get through until the harvest time for the second year of that new cycle in the new sabbatical cycle. And so God promises them, if you just trust me, if you just do things my way, I'll take care of you. Don't panic. I always like to think about Jesus' teaching in the New Testament in his Sermon on the Mount. He says, seek first God's kingdom and its attendant righteousness, and all these other things will be added to you. Now, what were the other things? What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? What are we going to wear? Where are we going to live? God says, if you just take care of God's business, which is righteousness, he'll take care of all that other stuff. Trust him. And so that is an Old Testament doctrine as well. Verse 23, the land shall not be sold in perpetuity for the land is mine. See, I wasn't just talking out of turn there a while ago. The land belongs to God. The people are the tenant farmers living on that land, responsible for their little slice of it. And so they can't permanently transfer that land to somebody else. It'll always revert in the Jubilee year, if not before, with a redemption process. Again, the land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine, for you are strangers and sojourners with me. So you're just living here temporarily. And in all the country you possess, you shall allow a redemption of the land. So here's the rule. If somebody does end up transferring agricultural control of their inherited property, they always have the right of redemption. Example, verse 25. If your brother becomes poor and sells part of his property, then his nearest redeemer shall come and redeem what his brother has sold. Now, I think what's being looked at here is, in particular, out of tribe or out of Israel leasing. So if you've got like a local, let's pretend we're all in the Judean tribe together. So we've got another fellow Judean who falls in hard times. And so he makes an arrangement with somebody from Simeon tribe. Or maybe he makes arrangements with some person who's living in Judea, but he's not Israeli, to take over the agricultural workings of that piece of property. Well, then somebody in the Judah tribe that is closer related to him is supposed to step in and keep that property under control closer to the family line. So his nearest redeemer, like a brother or an uncle or a nephew or a cousin, is supposed to come and pay the bill, get that property back into the family. Verse 26, if a man has no one to redeem it, and then he himself becomes prosperous and finds sufficient means to redeem it, then let him calculate the years since he sold it and pay back the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and then return to his property. So falls on hard times, gets himself turned around. He immediately has the right to go back to the person he sold the lease rights to and say, hey, here's the money for what remains until the sabbatical year, until the year of Jubilee. I want the property back into my control. Verse number 28. If he does not have sufficient means to recover it, then what he sold shall remain in the hand of the buyer until the year of Jubilee. So maybe he's only got enough to buy back portions of that particular property. That's fine. But the Jubilee rule still applies. In the Jubilee, it will be released and he shall return to his property. All land leases terminate on the 10th day of the 7th month at the beginning of the 50th year. That's the reality. Now, here we have some tweaks on this information. If a man sells a dwelling house in a walled city, so that's not a piece of agricultural land, he may redeem it within a year of its sale. For a full year, he shall have the right of redemption. If it is not redeemed within a full year, then the house in the walled city shall belong in perpetuity to the buyer throughout his generations. It shall not be released in the Jubilee. So a non-agricultural property, which is inside the walls of a city, has 1 year of potential redemption. Then the transfer of control is permanent. Now, verse 31, but the houses of the villages that have no wall around them shall be classified with the fields of the land. So unwalled villages are counted as agricultural housing, if you will. They are like a field. And so they may be redeemed, that's true, and they shall be released in the Jubilee. They will revert. And so everybody's supposed to know these rules. Now, as for the cities of the Levites, we haven't heard about those yet, but eventually the Levites will have assigned cities throughout the 12 tribes. This allows them to serve the people for God. The Levites may redeem at any time the houses in the cities they possess. So the walled housing rule does not apply to Levites because they have specific Levitical cities that only belong to them. So that's their guaranteed possession. If one of the Levites exercises his right of redemption, then the house that was sold in a city they possess shall be released in the Jubilee. For the houses in the cities of the Levites are their possession among the people of Israel. But the fields of pasture land belonging to their cities may not be sold, for that is their possession forever. And so here's another tweak to the overarching rule. Levites may not transfer their property leases to other people. We're talking about the lands that are assigned around the Levitical cities. Those have to stay Levitical. They can't be transferred anywhere else. Since we were talking about people getting in trouble financially, we have this next. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. So here we have somebody that falls in hard times. You don't mock him. You don't take advantage of him. You help him out. Take no interest from him or profit, but fear your God that your brother may live beside you. So he might ask you, can you help me out with a loan? If you loan him money, you can't attach any type of interest to it. That's against the rules. Because it would be taking advantage of somebody in hard times. That's simply the issue. You shall not lend him your money at interest, nor give him your food for profit. So you sell him food items at cost. You don't try to make money off the back of poor people. It's that simple, folks. It is a sin. It is wrong. I am he who is your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. And so you will see from time to time in God's word, God talking about being the defender of the widow and the orphan and the foreigner, because these are all in the same category of not as well protected as the normal citizen. And so none of these people are to be misused or abused. Verse 39. If your brother becomes poor beside you and sells himself to you, so now we talk about indebtedness slavery, you shall not make him serve as a slave. He shall be with you as a hired worker and as a sojourner. So you don't treat him like he's an animal. You don't treat him like he's subhuman. You treat him as a fellow Israeli, a fellow citizen. He shall serve with you until the year of Jubilee. Now, it's actually the word for release here, I think, is being intended, rather than the 50th year, because we've seen in other passages that it is the year, the sabbatical year that comes every 7 years, that triggers people being released from indebtedness contracts. Then he shall go out from you, he and his children with you, and go back to his own clan and return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. Remember, they were slaves in Egypt, and God says they are not going to be treated that way in their own country ever again. Verse 43, you shall not rule over him ruthlessly, but shall fear your God. And this is true, I think, across the board for anybody that is our subordinate. They need to be treated with respect. As for your male and female slaves whom you have, you may buy male and female slaves from among the nations that are around you. You may also buy from among the strangers who sojourn you and their clans that are with you, who have been born in your land, and they may be your property. And then you may bequeath them to your sons after you to as an inheritance, as possession forever. You may make slaves of them, but over your brothers, the people of Israel, you shall not rule over one over another ruthlessly. Now, this is a little bit harder to understand. Non-Israelis who are slaves have to serve their full indebtedness term. It is the Israelis who are released every seventh year. But I do not believe, by any stretch of imagination, that this passage allows for the Israelis to breed and mistreat non-Israelis as if they were animals to be abused in their service.